Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Pound. Now this week, to get clued up on what's what in the world of film and music, we're hitting the cinema with the film critic Karen Krizanovich, and we've enlisted the broadcaster Baylen Leonard to spin a couple of fresh January tracks for us. Plus we'll be previewing an interview I did with the writers Elizabeth Day and Chris Power, all in praise of the short story. And at the end of the show, Fernando will be with us to discuss this week's Global Countdown. That is all ahead on the show. Do stay tuned. Karen and Baylen, welcome to the programme.
Hello.
It's great to be here.
It's not too late to say Happy New Year. Let's still do that. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And to you.
Thank you very much. And also, I didn't realise, I thought you guys were sort of old hands in the arts review department, but I didn't realise we've never had this particular dream team formation together.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's
so,
my first new friend of 2018.
It's pretty good. Okay, the ice has been broken. It's good stuff.
I tell you what, Facebook will say, you've had 2,000 new friends, so you can be my first one.
Yay. There you go, so right? Great. It's good stuff. I'm glad we're bringing people together here.
Makes you feel so profligate at the end of the year, though. Not that many.
Profligate. I like that.
Wait, I'm looking that up.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay, so Karen, we're going to start off with films. We're in your corner first. It's been a pretty big week in the film world. The Golden Globes making headlines, sometimes for the films, definitely for Oprah's speech, the Time's Up movement, which saw everyone clad in black, and as we said, some of the films, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Now, this is your first pick. It picked up a clutch of awards.
Oh, yeah.
It's an amazing film.
It is a really good film, and it's one of those that the less you know about it, the better. But, of course, I was trying to talk my hairdresser into seeing it, and he's
so
like
tell us
saying,
all about it.
And he's like saying, oh, I don't want any, I don't want any, I like any. And I said, look, it's dark, but it's funny. It's uplifting, and it's depressing. It's shocking, and it's comforting. It's all of these things, and it's beautifully paced. And yes, it might have two endings, but so what?
Does it have two endings?
It does a bit. There's a fade out and a fade up. So
I already
yeah.
know more about it than
yeah.
I did.
But yeah. anyway, but the point of this film is that even if you don't like Frances McDormand, how could you not? Even if you don't like Martin McDonagh, how could you not after In Bruges?
Yeah.
You owe yourself to watch this film, if only for half an hour. If only, and you'll be sucked in, because it is a story of a woman who has lost her daughter, and the local police, she thinks, are doing nothing about it. So she's driving down a disused road, and this is where the billboards come in. She sees three pretty shabby billboards, nothing on them. She goes, she buys them, and puts up a message. And that's where we start. And apparently, McDonagh said that he was traveling in the Deep South. He refuses to say which state. He's like, Florida, Missouri, I don't know. Like, they're all waiting to figure out.
Yeah.
Where he actually saw billboards saying there was an unsolved crime. What are you doing about it? A tragedy. And that's the kickoff. And the really terrific thing about this film is not only is it fun to watch, and it really holds your attention, but it's almost like real life in that the characters are surprising. It is unpredictable, and that's another reason why this film is great.
Let's play a little clip from it. We'll talk a bit more about Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri after this.
In 3, 2, 1. And as sad as the spectacle of these billboards might be, this reporter, for one, hopes this finally puts an end to the strange saga of the three billboards outside.
Then put an end to shit, you fucking retard. This is just a fucking start. Why don't you put that on your Good Morning Missouri fucking wake up broadcast, bitch?
Why don't you put that on your broadcast indeed? Thanks, Frances McDormand and Martin McDonagh, the writer and director of this film, we should say. You mentioned how could you not like Martin McDonagh after In Bruges. Seven Psychopaths I quite enjoyed as well. But this seems to have fused all the best bits of his films together in something that thou shalt not spoil.
I don't want to spoil it, but I want
people
to go.
But I was crying and laughing. I was actually wiping tears away in a particular scene, you can probably guess, and then literally jumped out of my seat laughing 2 seconds later in hilarity. It's nuts. He's such a good writer.
He is a really good writer. And the casting is exquisite. You can't really. And one line I've got to say, this is a bit going. One of the characters comes up with this amazing life adage and say, where'd you get that? I got it from a book about polio or polo, which is the one with the horses.
So good. She's such a good character.
Fantastic.
It's so good. And there is twist upon twist upon twist. You really have no idea where it's going. I mean, I had no idea it was going to win, but I'm a sop to any Hollywood scriptwriter. But you kind of don't, you have no idea. I mean, obviously you don't want to look at your watch and go, well, I know it's 134 minutes, so it's going to, but there, you just kind of, it feels like it's kind of like a little bit like a kind of wild thrashing creature that Martin McDonagh has kind of just allowed to fill its natural habitat somehow.
Yeah, it is very much like that. But also, you know, I don't know if you ever do like tarot cards or astrology or anything or predictive things like, well, this year you're going to fall in love, that kind of thing. But it gives you this sense that this is when people say, well, how can you do that when you think it's going to predict what's going to happen? It gives you the sense that no matter where you think things are going to go and no matter what you could predict, that the future is being made every second.
Yeah.
And it changes and it changes and it develops and it changes and it goes this way and that way. And it's amazing. I mean, there are parts that I was hiding behind my hands I didn't want to see again because I've seen it twice. And there are other bits where I just think, you know, this, I just want to suck on this scene for a while like a bone. You know? Vegans, forgive me, just substitute bone for broccoli.
It is that good, and you do want to remember some of the lines. The writing is phenomenal. It seemed very Old Testament to me. This thing, it seemed very Steinbeckian, right? It feels very American, but yet somehow something that someone that only an Irishman could write with some of the language, some of the pacing, some of the rhythm of it seemed deeply Irish. Deeply
he's
Catholic,
got such confidence. Yeah. Such, I mean, don't forget his brother's a filmmaker and he's already won an Oscar for a short film anyway. But McDormand initially didn't want to do this and she's persuaded by her husband to do it. And she said she based her character on John Wayne. And so Sam Rockwell based his on another John Wayne movie character, which was written for him. So you get this very John Ford kind of escalation. Yeah. And it really works because it feels comfortable, but it also feels new and fresh.
Yeah.
See, I'm really intrigued by this because I was a big fan of his plays before this. They were all so very Irish, you know, like it just small town Ireland or something really specific about Ireland. And now it's this whole thing about small town America. So it'll be interesting for me because I actually didn't like In Bruges very much. But I really want to see this, and it's really kind of captured my attention, and I can't work out if it's captured my attention because it's the zeitgeist at the moment, and everybody's saying it must be the thing that you go and see, or if I'm interested because I'm from small town America and I want to see it kind of through his eyes, and I'm just interested to see how well he does small town America, if he does it as well as he did kind of small village Ireland.
Is there another country that dyes its river green on St. Patrick's Day? I don't think so. How small was your town? Population?
No, it wasn't as small as like an Irish village, but it was definitely small.
Big Rock, Illinois, 560.
Oh, you
there
win.
There you go. I beat
you.
Yeah.
You win. Yeah, you win.
But it is, I mean, but the whole thing about the everybody knows each other, curtain twitching.
So it's similar, really, to
very
what he was doing
so.
With the Irish villages.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where else could you set this film, Karen? I mean, could you set it in Australia? In somewhere, somewhere on the fringes of the outback, you could set it in a small Irish town.
You
so,
could,
you, know what
you
I mean?
Could, because America likes to think of itself as sort of Irish anyway.
Yeah, of course.
Or German, if you like,
or Scottish, on,
or Scottish, or Scottish. Yeah, I mean, you know, or yeah, anything that's about ready to be, examined.
Anything that has more history than America.
Well, I mean, that's not saying much, is it? I've got chickens in my refrigerator older than our country, but never mind. I think you could set it anywhere where there is a history of, I don't want to say violence, but of bigotry, I suppose, which I suppose could be, well, anywhere.
Could be a few places. Let's not list them. We've only got about half an hour left. I wondered, the only thing I wondered was the sell-by date of it. I wondered how much, I was full of excitement as I walked out of the screening theatre, and then it was one of those things you kind of think, well, what is the bad point? What could there possibly be about this thing? Because it's such a satisfying entertainment. Yeah. It seems to tackle, I think, sort of not full frontal, kind of maybe accidentally, some of the issues that are ravaging America, but in a very non-specific way, I suppose. But I wonder how long it lived with you afterwards.
It lived with me afterwards. I mean, really, Frances McDormand's character, Mildred, if it were a man, we would think she was violent. wouldn't we? But because it's a woman, we think that it's okay for her to do that stuff. So that would be my only thing, is that as civilization progresses, please have it progress, that we could say, well, if we swapped roles, then it wouldn't work. But I think I think Madonna adjusts that with Sam Rockwell's character. You don't want to know a lot about Sam Rockwell's character. Don't think about it.
Okay, should I plug my ears while you do this?
Please. No, I'm not going to say it because I want you to see the movie and hate it, but we'll still love you. he's a play person. He's not a movie person. They're different.
Luckily, he's got his earbuds in.
What? Are you guys talking about me?
No, it's fine. Okay, so Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is out now in UK cinemas.
Yes.
It's out today, in fact. Also out this week is Darkest Hour. Mm-hmm. This is a period drama set during World War II. It's about Winston Churchill, played this time by Gary Oldman.
Who knew?
Yeah, I was pretty. Well, what do we think of Gary Oldman's Churchill?
I was looking at it because the problem when you know somebody, you know, he's on the money, right? So. Right. He is on the money. Yes, he is. When you look at somebody, well, does he look like the 5-pound note? But I've actually got his makeup artist, Kazuhiro Tsuzuki. I can't say that very well. It's facial prosthetics. And the wonderful thing is that Joe Wright said that they were really having a problem getting that right. He said the first time it looked like he was wearing a chicken on his head.
Yep.
And then it was too slender. So he said, if it looks like Johnny Knoxville and Bad Grandpa, we're fine. So I thought, hey, you know, let's not accuse him of being a prude or pretentious. But you watch it at first, and first thing you do when it's a biopic about somebody that you think you know or the familiar face, iconic, does it look like him? Does it? Then you sort of realize there's Gary Oldman growing out of Winston Churchill's body. And then you just think, wow, I'm really enjoying this, because he's human. He's an egomaniac. He's privileged. He's frightened. He's out of touch with people. I have very few quibbles with this movie, although it is not strictly historically accurate. For example, there's a scene where he goes down to the tube, which it seems like a dream sequence supposed to be real, but it's not. And I just think it's compelling, and it will make people who aren't interested in Churchill very interested in Churchill.
On that note, here's a clip of Darkest Hour.
The Germans have encircled 60 British and French divisions. We are looking at a collapse of Western Europe within the next few days.
How long have they got if we don't rescue them?
Maybe 2 days. We would need a miracle to get our men out.
You have the full weight of the world on your shoulders.
We're facing certain defeat on land, the annihilation of our army, and imminent invasion. We must negotiate peace talks.
When will the lesson be learned? You cannot reason with a tiger when your head is in its mouth!
Nonsense. The only slippery slope.
Would you stop interrupting me while I am interrupting you?
Good stuff. Gary Oldman as Churchill on fairly epigrammatical form there, of course. And we should mention, this is the new project, the new film from Joe Wright, who's firmly stuck in the past. Anna Karenina, Pride and Prejudice, Atonement. So he's sort of been on vaguely this form before. How do we plug it into the rest of his work?
Well, after Pan, it was going to be very interesting to see what happened, because Pan was such an indulgence and difficult to watch. I know I wrote a lot about it and I had to watch it a lot. And Hannah, you thought, well, Joe Wright, Hannah. But he's very good at taking drama and making it theatrical, so maybe you'd like it.
I do like films as well. I don't want this rumor to get started.
That's okay. It's all right. It's okay to be different. It's fine. I don't like theater because I can get up and walk out and hurt somebody's feelings.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. But it's exciting and it's ornate. And he does have an eye for a beautiful scene, a beautifully framed shot. And I think that Lily James as his dutiful secretary is quite good. It all seems very heightened and very arch.
Yeah.
But you do have to admire a man whose breakfast tray includes whiskey, I think, or is it gin along with the pay? You're thinking, wow, this guy drinks a lot and he's running the country. Maybe that's why he drinks a lot.
How does Joe Wright, how does Gary Oldman, how do we avoid the cliches, or do we just indulge ourselves and roll around in them like pigs in, I'll say mud, as it's a family show.
Should have told Frances McDormand that.
She's a willain to herself.
She is indeed. The worst thing you can say about Darkest Hour, well, two worst things you can say, is it's not historically accurate. It's a bit misleading. Mm.
That's a sort of cliche in itself, though, is most war films.
It is. It is. Because, unfortunately, life doesn't come in three parts. But also, his performance is so central that it almost, if you were to take him out and stick another actor in, I don't know if somebody could have really held it together, because it's not on its own a very, very strong film. It looks pretty, but it's a setting really for this amazing jewel of a performance.
I always find it's a funny one, but when that territory has been covered so many times and so many actors have done him. I weirdly thought John Lithgow was good as Churchill.
A lot of people liked him.
And obviously, again, with Gary Oldman, you've got the lack of physical proximity. Mm. You know, he's not a Robert Hardy or a Albert Finney, a big guy.
But he seems like he can kind of do anything.
He's padded out, though, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He can.
I mean, you know, I'm thinking of his...
Joe Orton.
Dracula and all of that, where you just kind of get completely absorbed with what he's doing. And actually, I was thinking while you were talking during that and talking about how he looks and all of that sort of stuff, when actors are really good at playing that role, by the end of it, you're convinced that that person looks that way anyway. So, like, referencing The Crown, which you just did there, by the end of kind of binge-watching The Crown, I was convinced that Claire Foy, that is what the Queen actually looks like.
You kind of think the banknotes are fake, don't you now?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so that was Darkest Hour. That hits the big screen today, and it'll roll out in cinemas around the world throughout the month. Karen, thank you very much for leading us, taking us both by the hand, and leading us up a filmic garden path.
Well, it's dark in there.
It's good to have company.
Always.
Just for an hour.
Keep those sweet wrappers, you know, in your pocket.
It's music time, Baylen Leonard.
Yes.
Nice to have your dulcet tones back on the program. We're going to first aid kit first.
Yeah, first aid kit. You know, I kind of ply my trade mainly in country and Americana and roots music. And what's really exciting for me in First Aid Kit is that they've taken this genre to a whole new audience. And it's an astounding thing that they've done. And actually, as somebody who goes to Americana and country gigs and quite a lot, that is reflected in the audience, but it's not necessarily reflected in what people think about the audiences that go to this type of music.
What's Americana versus country?
So Americana is any kind, it's a much wider genre. So
do you have to wear gingham?
You do not, okay. but you would be welcome in either country or Americana wearing gingham, but it's not
always
required.
Pack gingham, I would say.
Yeah,
plaid.
Fail safe gingham, I think, is the way forward. Americana basically is any derivative of American roots music.
Wow.
So that can be jazz, that can be the blues,
really?
That can be bluegrass, that can be gospel, that can be soul. And it's anything that derives and is now kind of updated to whatever degree, sometimes to a point where it's almost unrecognizable, sometimes really leaning heavily upon those old sounds. And so it's a genre that has really taken hold lately. The phrase itself hasn't been around that long. So people used to use things like alt country when they didn't quite know. It's not quite country music, but it's something else. So Americana has become this catch-all phrase. And despite its name, there's a huge growing Americana scene in the UK as well. It's a really hard thing to pin down. And that's part of the problem, actually, with getting people to understand what Americana music is.
Presumably everyone knows what it is when they hear it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things, I kind of feel like, I don't know whether how you listen to music, I always feel like there's an image in your head of, not of a promo video, but of like of what it makes you feel like. I feel like there's a little bit of, America is a fairly large place, especially for a Brit, but I feel I have a little bit of dust. I have a little bit of Jukes of Hazzard in my head somehow.
But
having said that,
on your boots.
I love Bill Callahan and I love Lamb Chop and all these things which would have been out country, but now I kind of think they're probably the kind of sort of the exact middle of the Venn diagram of Americana and country, that sort of thing. Right?
Well, it's exactly that, and it is something that you just know it when you hear it. Right. So somebody like First Aid Kit is a really great example.
Oh, I forgot what we were talking about. That's good.
Sorry.
This is good.
What's great about First Aid Kit is Swedish. Folk is kind of where they started. They still classify themselves a little bit as folk, but then they're always on the Americana chart. They've won loads of Americana awards. They're firmly embraced by the Americana community. And now embraced by people way outside of that. So you go to a first aid kit and everybody's there, from young to old, all different classes, people who think they're really cool and people who decidedly are not very cool, and everybody in between. And they've managed to take this genre that, by all rights, and I don't just mean Americana here, but I mean the folk that they do, they've managed to take this to the mainstream while still being completely true to the sounds of that. So with their last album that they had out, Stay Gold, which absolutely blew
such
them
a good record, yeah.
through the roof. Yeah. They could have quite easily have gone a whole, they could have gone further in that direction and further away from folk and Americana. And with their new album, Ruins, which is out on the 19th of January, it's really pleasing to hear that they've dug their heels in deeper. Mm-hmm. And they've actually, to my ear, stripped away some of that more populist stuff, which is not a diss, by the way. Stay Gold was an absolutely brilliant album. But they've stripped away that. They've just dug in. And this is our sound. This is what we do. And it's really pleasing to hear.
Let's get a little taster. This is Fireworks from First Aid Kit's new LP, which is called Ruins. Why do I do this to myself every time? I know the way it ends before it's even begun. Pretty unmistakable sound now, isn't it? That First Aid Kit. I mean, I think people can smell it a mile off. Those kind of blood harmonies. Also, they seem to be one of those bands or that songwriting duo that can just kind of pluck songs out of the ether. They don't feel like, you can't quite imagine them scratching their heads and having hours of teeth grinding lunacy as they try to come up with a riff.
Yes.
Right? It's just there, doesn't it seem like that?
And let's remind ourselves as well that they're in their 20s. Right?
Yeah.
So these are not some you know, indiscriminate age people that have been doing this for like 60 years and that's their sound and they're sticking with it. These are young girls from Sweden who have latched onto this, and probably the first song that really put them on the map was a song called Emmylou, which was about Emmylou Harris. And actually, even listening to this new stuff from Ruins, you can really hear Emmylou Harris in their voice. You can hear artists like Iris DeMent, who also have a very specific and almost old-time sound in there. And for me, that's hugely exciting because they're in their 20s producing this music, and then their audience is also in their 20s loving this music, as well as loads of other people who love this music. But playing mainstream festivals and playing huge venues. They've got a couple of gigs coming up at the Roundhouse in London, maybe next month or at some point soon. Very cool venue, very prestigious venue, and they're selling it out. They're packing it out. And so for me, it's a real kind of shift in how their popularity can be a shift in how people view this type of music, that this is a music that's alive, it's breathing, it's evolving, it's here, it's now, it's not something that's stuck in the past. People, young people are doing it and young people are appreciating it, and it's really good, and I think that's hugely exciting.
It's super exciting. Live, they're very good live. I saw them at the Hammersmith Apollo last time. I guess they played there on the Stay Gold tour, and they were very good, quite clinical.
Yeah,
actually, there's not a lot of. I kind of felt, I thought, God, because I think they tour a
Did
lot.
Did you want them to dance?
I kind of wanted a bit more. I thought, I don't know, that I thought that was probably fairly telling of them being young.
Yeah, sure.
Actually, rather than anything else, because they're obviously phenomenal songwriters. They're phenomenal, phenomenal songwriters and phenomenal performers. Man. I thought with my new year, I would be able to start saying words like phenomenal on the radio.
Something's never
it's
changed.
It's coming. But do you know what I mean? I wanted a little bit more go in them. But I guess that comes with confidence.
Yeah, I suppose
age,
that also maybe. The music is so good that at some point you must have forgotten that you wanted more of that, surely.
Oh, yeah, no, that's
because
just one of my...
You just get drawn into it. And their voices, like you said, there's this blood harmony that we call it, or family harmony, where you can really only achieve that. Really, there's very few people that aren't blood related who can achieve that level of harmony or that tone in their harmony. It's a thing, blood
really?
Harmony. It's a term. It's a actual thing. And of course, being sisters, they have it in spades. But the other thing to remember about this is that, yeah, they're kind of the flag bearers for this at the moment. But they're by no means the exception. There are so many young artists of that age from all over the world that are doing this type of music and at this quality that you know, there's going to be a big group of them before too long, and it's going to become the norm that this type of music has seeped into the mainstream. I mean, if you look at Mumford & Sons is a great example. They kind of really...
And they were related, weren't they?
Are quite responsible for bringing Americana to the mainstream, because they are straight up Americana. They're being honored at the Americana Awards at the end of this month for being trailblazers.
And they're from Cornwall or something.
Well, that's the thing, because even though this is Americana music, where did America get its music? Well, it got its music from the folk songs of this part of the world. So it's kind of a nice full circle thing, I think.
Yeah. And it's interesting as well, Mumford & Sons, berated by large sections of the music press when they were very successful, as many successful groups will
and
be.
And still are.
And still are, and still a bit of a joke. But First Aid Kit. But it's that thing, as soon as something's popular, it's a lesson in, as soon as something's popular, you have to have a go at it, I suppose.
It's just the way
and
it is,
a bit
isn't
of,
it?
It's a bit of a thing with First Aid Kit. Oh, they sound American when they talk as well as when they sing.
But a lot of Swedish people do sound American.
Yeah, of course they do.
When they talk.
It's a funny old
I'm
thing.
I'm Swedish. So, you know, you're Swedish.
Yeah.
We're all Swedish.
But, you know, Mumford & Sons, they continue to get stick, and it's so undeserved. So when we announced them as the Trailblaze Award winners for the Americana Music Awards 2018, there were hardworking musicians out there who took umbrage with that. And the only reason they took umbrage with that is because they didn't stay in their lane. You know, anybody who gets successful and takes something to a wider market, it's not that they've sold out, it's that they've become successful, and surely that's the goal of every working musician, right? Mm-hmm. Is to create beautiful art and become successful and have people hear it around the world. And First Aid Kit are doing that, and Mumford & Sons obviously are doing that as well.
I am in your lane, Balin. Don't worry.
Right. There's plenty of room.
I like that. Figuring out how to go from Americana through First Aid Kit. Signing off there with a little bit of motoring advice.
I love that. I'm in your blind spot, baby.
We haven't done Lanco yet. We're going to do Lanco, perhaps in shorter form.
Yes.
We've gone through Americana. Should we hear it? Let's get into the vibe. Lanco, also under the Americana category.
Country.
Are they a country?
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute.
So here we go, Karen. This will be a good test for you.
Greatest love story from Lanco, who it says on my script as well. I just didn't read it. Country, not Americana.
You can tell it's country because they're twanging.
There you go.
Yeah.
A little bit of twang. I shouldn't have corrected you quite so quickly, to be fair.
It's fine, Ben. Thanks.
The great thing about Lanco is that they're very much in the country genre, and have gone mainstream and become really popular outside of the country genre. And while doing that, also sound super authentic and sound like they have references that come from Americana or that come from roots in some of their songs. Some of them are just straight up kind of pop country, but they've managed to, and this is their debut album, Hallelujah Nights. It's out on the 19th of January as well. They had released an EP before that had Greatest Love Story on it, and Greatest Love Story just took over.
So this has been monstrous on Spotify, YouTube. This has been
absolutely huge.
Absolutely nuts. Holly told me before, this is kind of gone stratospheric.
Oh, it's
tens and tens of millions.
Yes, I think maybe even hundreds. Of millions. You know, it's just nonstop. And they have a lot of good songs like this. This is, everything that they've put out so far has been absolutely fantastic. And it's managed to take this country thing, and while they're huge stars in country and they went to number one in the States and all of this sort of stuff, they've also managed to, outside of that genre, attract a lot of fans. And it doesn't hurt that you have a song like Greatest Love Story, so that's instantly a wedding song, right? If you're looking for a new wedding song, Greatest Love Story is
going to
be right
up there. Slow dance / drunk dance, right?
I'm always looking for a new wedding song, always.
Well, put this one on your list, Karen, and you'll get to it eventually.
When they do Mediocre Love Story, that'll be mine.
Disband in at one. It's Disappointing Love Story.
We'll review that next week.
Now you've hit it off so well, and you don't really need me to be here, which I'm fine with, by the way. Can you make Pat Karen a playlist? Can we all access it on Spotify?
I would love. Yeah, I'm already trying.
I can absolutely make you a playlist. I love making a playlist.
It's Hallelujah Nights. It's going to be the album. It's out on January the 19th. The band are called Lanco.
Yeah.
Greatest Love Story is the kind of flag bearer for it. Quick one while we're still on the subject of country Americana. I don't want to diss one of your heroes. I kind of doubt he is. How do we stop the First Aid Kits and the Lancos of this world from becoming Garth Brooks?
Well,
do you know what I mean? That must be a question that you chaps on the Americana panel over nights of whiskey and cigars.
Often, yeah. I mean, just last night, mull over. I was thinking about
at least monthly.
But you know, this is the thing, right? I am not a snob when it comes to good music.
Oh, okay. See, I knew I was going to come out of this second best.
I think you can fall. You can stand either side you want to with Garth Brooks and people like that. But in the end, it's hard to deny their popularity.
Yeah.
And I think that if somebody is as popular as a Garth Brooks and that they can bring someone into the genre that might dig a little bit deeper and then discover somebody like First Aid Kit or discover somebody like Lanco, then that's nothing but a good thing.
So Garth Brooks is an entry drug.
Yeah.
There you go. He's a gateway drug.
He's like a quick toke outside the Barley Mow on a joint.
I don't think he would approve of that, to be fair.
Okay. Thanks. Ben Leonard, thanks as ever for coming in. Riding roughshod over every preconception. I won't say I hold dear. I just, you know. Thank you very much indeed. So Lanco and First Aid Kit. I always love your choices, Ben. And thank you very much
indeed.
That signs off our music section. But while I'm here, I'm going to take the opportunity to plug my other show, Culture. For this Monday's show, I sat down with the writers Elizabeth Day and Chris Power to discuss short stories. And here is some of the wit and wisdom they bestowed upon me about that concise format.
I think there's a problem in just saying a short story is short. A novel, you do have more space to explain what motivates your character and to unwind the plot. And I think my big mistake when I first came to write my first ever short story when I was about 15 was that I treated it...
All your friends were in it.
Actually, I was writing as a sort of 85-year-old woman who just lost her husband, but
more sophisticated than my one then.
But I sort of treated it as a synopsis for a novel, and I didn't realise I was doing that. So it wasn't actually a short story, because I think with a short story, a really brilliant writer of a short story has to know already who their characters are, what the setup is, and has to come from that position of knowledge. It's almost like you've had to do the whole work of like writing a novel to be able to sit down and write a short story.
Okay, that's
because,
really interesting. Yeah.
You need to come and you need to be brave enough to make those choices, to cut back your language and to put in a sentence that will reveal. Everything has to do something in a short story. It has to reveal something. And that's why I think they're incredibly hard to do. And again, I think it all comes down to a sense of quiet confidence that makes you feel safe as a reader, but also leaves that... There's a kind of beautiful sense of longing to the best short stories, I think, where you can read them again and again and never quite get a grip of them, but you know that there's something about it that keeps drawing you back.
And something, I suppose, I was going to mention Elizabeth Taylor's The Devastating Boys is something that I love as a collection of short stories. And it's such a pleasurable world to inhabit, despite its prickliness. It's hot. I mean, in her case, sort of post-war, sort of slightly sad England and sort of slightly provincial sad England. Her protagonists are kind of unknowable women, but women of great strength and stuff. But there is something amazingly addictive and pleasurable about the universe that you inhabit as the reader there and as someone that becomes part of the story. I suppose there is that. I suppose there is a simple idea of wanting more from the story constantly. I suppose that's a sign of the success of it, maybe.
Well, and that comes that sort of idea of I think in a lot of those writers you mentioned and a lot of the writers that I get the most of, there's a lot of ambiguity in the work, so it really invites the reader to interpret. And some readers don't like that, and that might be a reason we can get to it later why short stories might not be as popular as the novel.
Yeah,
I think they do make certain.
Well, let's talk about that now, actually, because this is part of it. I think the idea of what is the market for the short story. I mean, I wonder why they aren't more successful. I wanted to pick you up on something that you wrote in one of your recent pieces, Chris. Neil Gaiman said the fairly decent Televiaans, it's Neil Gaiman, sort of said, well, it's the short story should be having a golden age now because you can read it on your phone and other things. You didn't quite agree with him on that. And I wanted to know why, because I similarly thought, you know, we should, there should be a service that where you could, you get sent a short story a week for a small fee, and it should be a very fertile thing where people can say they like this, they didn't like that, whatever it is. But I felt that the medium that we use now could sort of ensure a golden age for the short story. Why not?
Well, I think your idea of sending a short story is fantastic, and I would be the first to sign up.
And you're going
to
do that? I might be some time.
I think what puzzled me about what Neil Gaiman said was he said, oh, because of our short attention spans, and stories are perfect for your iPad or Kindle. But you know, I read War and Peace on my phone. It's that's not the only novel I've read.
You've got more memory than my phone.
But it's, you know, it's there. Your screen's your screen. But in fact, the problem I have with the short attention span argument, which you do hear a lot, and which on the surface of things makes sense. It's like, oh, it's short.
Do you think it's doing the short story down to say that it's sort of a practical shape or size for an impractical age or something?
No, I think it's fundamentally misunderstanding that, because I think most short stories, say your average New Yorker story, is probably somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 words, something like that. You're looking at like half an hour, 40 minutes reading time. That's not how many people read, whereas you're reading a chapter in a novel or something. Laurie Moore has spoken about this, where she says, you know, people can read for 15 minutes here or there, and novels are designed to be, no one's going to sit down and read a novel for 12 hours. So that's sort of taken into account. You have your sort of passages in the novel, and you have breaks. As a sort of 30-minute, 40-minute chunk of time, it's actually quite an awkward amount of time, and I think it's quite demanding. And I do think the short story, whatever it is something that can often lose its effect if you break it up. I mean, talking about Alice Munro, she's so subtle with how she sort of turns a story. Often they don't climax, as they sort of like fade out, but the climax is actually embedded somewhere in the story. But you can miss that if you're not really paying close attention, you know. And you might say, well, it was beautifully written, but you know, it sort of fades away. But in fact, it's quite a demanding act. And so whereas the novel, yes, pick it up, put it down, it's there. Short stories are just that awkward shape.
And you can catch my full interview with Elizabeth Day and Chris Power on this Monday's Culture with Robert Bound that airs at 1900 UK time. And to end the show, as always, it's time for Fernando Augusto's Global Countdown.
Hello, everyone.
I left out your last name.
Yeah.
Sorry, Fernando Augusto Pacheco's Global Countdown. It's good. It's branded. It's a whole new subgenre. It's brilliant. We love it. Our two guests around the table have been waiting patiently to get all this stuff we've been talking about out of the way.
Well, thanks for
you
to
reveal the country that you're going to be talking about today, Faye.
This time I think we should learn what the Kenyans are listening at the moment. Don't you think, Rob?
Let's do it.
It's a major African market, especially for music as well. Shall we start with number 5? I mean, it's the most boring of them all, but I have to say, it's Ed Sheeran with Perfect.
I've never heard of it.
And yeah, who is Ed Sheeran, by the way?
Yeah.
I never spoke about him on the Global Countdown, but this song, he's performing with Beyoncé. So that's, she added a little bit of flavor to the song. Shall we hear a clip?
Let's hear a clip.
Yeah.
Ed Sheeran, Perfect, featuring Beyoncé. God, it makes you miss Barry Manilow.
Yeah, it's true. And it's funny, this song has been a huge hit in the US as well. It's the fifth week, it's number one as well. Of course, I think Beyoncé helped a bit, but yeah, but Ed Sheeran, nobody can stop him.
I didn't even hear her in there.
Yeah, it's just a tiny bit. Okay. You know, it's like they did with Despacito. They ask Justin
Bieber. She doesn't have a solo in it, or
a little solo. It's not. I think it's less than 30 seconds.
A marketing man's dream.
Exactly.
However,
yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. Right. You know, that's all you need.
Yeah.
It's like 5 seconds of Beyonce. Boom. Number one.
Number
bang.
One.
Boom. Bing. Yeah. Bang.
Maybe Garth Brooks should have Beyonce. Would you be okay with that?
All right.
By the way, talking about Garth Brooks,
we've got time to get into this.
I do like Standing Outside the Fire. I remember as a young kid watching the video, I cried.
It's a good one. Thank you.
It's cute.
Standing outside the fire, pissing in. Yeah. Number 4. Let's move it on.
Number 4. Yeah. We have a fresh duet between Bruno Mars and Cardi B. You know, she's the, you know, she's one of the main rappers at the moment. She's been doing very well in the US, and it sings in Kenya as well. The song is called Finesse, and you should watch the video. It's a mix of TLC and the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's very 90s. I think Bruno Mars loved the 90s. Fellas, grab your ladies if you're nice.
As you say, it is a perfect mix of the Fresh Prince and TLC, yeah. Somehow.
So much better than Perfect, the number five with Ed Sheeran and Beyonce. Sorry, guys. But number three is my favorite song. And finally, it's a Kenyan band. They're called Salty Soul. And it's a partnership with Nigerian dancehall singer Patu Ranking. The song is called Melanin. Let's hear a bit and then I'll tell you why it's causing so much controversy in Kenya. Would you put me in your diary?
Salty Soul with Melanin. I was just figuring out my dance for that when it was time to break and start talking. More is the pity. Controversy.
It's a very sensual song, as you could see, and they'd like a little bit of controversy because this video clip, I mean, apparently for some Kenyans is a bit X-rated. I've seen it. I think it's fine. There's some light nudity, nothing to worry about. But Kenyan censors didn't like it very much. And I was reading...
Let's do a new thing on next week's show where we show a number of videos to Fernando yeah. and go, is this okay?
Light nudity let's, or not?
I would love to be... I would love. That's my dream
you
job.
You'd be the director of the BBFC.
I would love that. I think I'll be very lenient. I'll accept a lot of...
I'm fine with what you're fine with saying.
They gave an interview to one of the Kenyan papers this year, I think three days ago, said we're not scared of losing fans because, you know, they like to push some boundaries.
So what are we talking about? What's on the video?
Well, you know, they're in bed, sometimes sex, but there's you don't see that much. It's right. Just about the sensuality, I mean, what they're potentially doing under the sheets as well.
What country are you from, Bernardo?
We've all gone red yeah. in here. Okay, talk us down to number two, Faye.
Not very controversial, but Patu Ranking is here, but now he's the main artist.
Oh, so
he's
this from, is the person that was from Nigeria. Duetting this
one thing that I've noticed about the Kenyan charts, it's quite pan-African in a way. I see that there's a lot of collaborations between musicians from different countries. I was not expecting that. I thought it would be just kind of Kenyans. But there's Tanzanians, Nigerians, so that's quite interesting. And talking about Tanzanians, he's also doing a part. I love the name of this guy. Is a rapper called Diamond Platinums with a Z in the end. I hope I pronounced correctly. And he sings Bongo Flava, which is a Tanzanian type of hip hop. I love the name as a Bongo Flava.
I wonder if they do a diet caffeine free version of that.
Exactly.
Then I'd be fine with it.
Shall we hear a clip?
Let's have it. Patu Ranking, we love you die?
Love you die.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's the worst piece of radio presenting in history. Sorry.
It's a weird name. Yeah, love you die. Yeah, I get a bit confused myself.
Apologies, everybody.
No, not a problem. Yeah, it's a good song. I still prefer Salty Soul, if you don't mind. But guys, are you ready for number one?
Oh, yeah.
Let's play it first. I like you, girl, in particular. You in particular. See, I like your waist in particular.
I like your waist in particular. Uh-huh.
That's something you could hear, you know, on the charts here in the UK, for example. And you know why? The main artist here is DJ Maphorisa. He's a South African producer. He was one of the co-producers of One Dance by Drake, which was one of the most popular songs of 2016. So he's massive in South Africa and you know, in the US as well, in Europe. And this song, he did a partnership with Major Lazer, the band of Diplo as well in the US. And I have to give the credits to everyone that's in the song. It's Nasty C was there as well, Ice Prince, Pato Ranking, and Jedema. It's a globalized world. Everybody
it's
pitched
absolutely
in.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What's, for fear of sounding a little bit like an old white guy, is he saying it's your wife? What's the chorus there?
It's your waist. Is it?
It's your
waist?
It's your wife. I favor.
It's your waist.
I believe it's your waist.
Yeah. Your waist.
In particular.
Not 100% here, but...
Fortunately, you're probably going to be playing out with that, so I can just do a little bit of revision. But I love that. That's super turbocharged, kind of like... What time of the night for you, Faye, would be the optimum time if I were to drop that track on the dance floor? When would you most like to have it?
1:25
1:25. That's why we love him, because he's so specific. Not only is he talking about Kenyan pop music, he's got 1:25 in his mind for the perfect time to drop DJ Maphorisa doing Particular. Fernando Augusto Pacheco, thank you very much indeed for talking us through the top five. If only it were 10, it would probably just mean there's more Ed Sheeran in Kenya. Thank you very much indeed, as ever. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. Thank you to my guests, Baylen Leonard and Karen Krizanovic. The show was produced by Holly Fisher, researched by Fernando, and I've been Robert Band. We'll be back at the same time next week. For the time being, let's play out with some more of that number one song. This is DJ Maphorisa with Particular.
They told me everybody's 15 minutes in a different time zone. And since I have it at the moment, you the one I wanna shine my light on. Get your life, little mama.